What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Runewell Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Hartwell. Today's guest is Greg Dosher from Sonars Percussion. Greg and I met through Aaron Stabell, our previous guest, at Team EA. Greg is an Eastman guy and really cool, really knowledgeable about his product, which is an amazing 5-octave Padauk practice marimba, practice keyboard. I played on it a little bit at his booth at Team EA, and I'm telling you guys, it's exactly what you need if you're in the market for a practice keyboard. Actually, you can teach on it, like he was saying in this convo. Puts out a sound, feels good. It's Padauk. It's not far from Rosewood. So then we get into that discussion as well, Padauk versus Rosewood. He has a lot of scientific backing with that as well. So I hope you enjoy. Just a quick reminder about your opportunity to contribute to the podcast through a donation link, a subscription link in the description below. Just make sure you subscribe, rate, and review, and follow on all socials. So without further ado, here's Greg Dosher.
No, that was completely on my own. I had been doing it since freshman year, I think. And then, like, I don't know what happened, but junior year, I really got into it. I was just like, you know, making electronic stuff. And I was like mixing that with like vibraphone playing. And it's really fun to just, you know, learn about all the producing and stuff and then mixing. And then after that, like, just getting into recording. It was just kind of like an organic thing, I think. But it's one of those things that,
this is just kind of what got me into it, you know, like, just looking. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many podcasts are out there that are big podcasts that have like really bad audio quality.
Yeah, for sure.
And editing and all that.
It seems like something that's so easy, you know, even just when you listen to anything.
Right.
And then you try it yourself and it's like, it sounds so bad.
Recording keyboards is a whole other thing. And, you know, getting that to sound right and everything has taken some trial and error, but.
Like recording electric keyboard?
No, like vibraphones, marimbas.
Oh, live. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's really cool though. Yeah, go ahead. I was gonna say, I mean, it's cool like that there's those, I only know of two or three, but it's like kind of the regional two or three people that like do the percussion specific recordings, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, it's kind of like there's not that Texas in general, I mean, like, unless you're part of like a university staff or something like that, I feel like it rarely happens. I mean, like me and my guys do it, but we try to get together every like 4 to 6 weeks and record something, but
that's cool.
It's such a process though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
But there, like, if you want to do something like that, like, you really got to be. You got to do it because it's, and you got to want to do it very, very badly. Like, you know, there's like, we want to do it right now. We're having fun doing it. It's just like, once you get further and further into it, you start taking on more projects and like running a commission like we're doing right now. And like, there's, it's just a lot. But and to get, I mean, these instruments are so rare to have personally that you got to get into the facility and you got to do this and that, and it's like it is a passion project by the very definition.
Yeah, it's a lot of schlepping, like, because you already have that with percussion instruments, but then like all the recording stuff, all the setup time, playing time, and then all the teardown and the editing and all that stuff. But some, like what I'm saying, like Evan Chapman's group, whatever, like the 210, 410 Media. I can't think of any other names, but stuff like that. I think it's great, like, yeah, those guys are great.
I would love to chat with him because I'm getting more and more into that stuff, and there's another guy that I followed. I cannot remember his name. Hold on, let me look him up because his stuff is cool. There's like I guess kind of a new wave when it comes to percussion media, which is good.
I
But
haven't followed it
also,
in like 4 years, so let me know.
yeah, I mean, there's kind of like maybe four or five people that are doing it like
Cool.
legit. I mean,
Yeah.
and then they're starting to emerge like a few YouTubers and, people like that. Adam Tan,
Yeah. Yeah.
Ansel Fitzgerald is his name.
Oh.
Composer, percussionist, videographer. I don't know where he goes to school. I think he goes to Michigan. His stuff's really cool. You guys check him out. He's Ansel underscore Fitzgerald, Ancel.
Oh, let's see.
Yeah, he
I'm gonna look him up.
yeah, it's cool stuff. He has a really modern kind of approach to his stuff. Really like clean looking. And a lot of that comes from gear and setup and having the eye to do so. But percussion looks, I keep thinking of the White Pines video. Like the White Pines video to me, like kicked off so many, it kicked off so many ideas for projects, and people were like, oh, it can actually look dope. It doesn't have to look like standard stage lights are on. We're all on this theater stage. Like it's,
Yeah, I think the lighting is really important. Like that changed so much. I think the lighting was a big thing. And like I would try that too, but I didn't have, I just had like lamps, and like it was whatever. But it's so good. I feel like when you're in school to like all those people, did that stuff on their own, right? Like
Oh,
they
yeah.
started doing that stuff by themselves, and like I think that's the biggest thing. Like all the things I feel like I learned a lot from are just things that I did on my own, and it was good being in a school environment, but it's not something that's mandatory, like the things that I did, like diving deep into Ableton and producing and stuff. And then even what I do now, the marimbas is like definitely not a class, you know what I mean? Like there's not a class on marimba building. It's just like it was just a chance thing. Like I was playing in a group that was using Padauk marimbas, like for Zimbabwean music, and we had to make our own instruments. It just got me like working with Padauk and woodworking and stuff. So it was at the school, but it wasn't like a mandatory thing, And then I think those things are the coolest, where it's like things that you do outside extracurricularly on your own that like
You
blossom
fall
into
into.
something.
Yeah.
I think those stories are really cool.
Well, let's talk about yours because that's how I met you, for one thing. That was, we were at Team EA and just kind of talk about like what your brand is, what the idea is behind these practice marimbas, because I played them and they feel great, and they honestly they sound, I mean, I know we were in a convention exhibit hall, but they sounded pretty solid, and like it's a good reference for getting on the real thing. So talk about it, what the name of it and everything.
Yeah, I think I kind of started in 2019 before pandemic stuff, right before that. And I think that summer, I was actually working with my dad on we were just, I think we both like making things. And he actually was like getting into theremins. And we made like a theremin using sonar stuff that translated like your distance into MIDI. I forget how like a theremin works, but it's not like a pulse coming out and then coming back and then measuring distance, but that's what we were doing. And that's where like the sonar comes from, like the sonarist. I actually started a company like thinking about making instruments with him and stuff. And then late 2019, like I started working with Paduke a lot. Like I said, through this group at Eastman, that's like Shona music from Zimbabwe. Really fun stuff. It's like marimbas that are probably, it's a choir of marimbas that are like 19 keys for the soprano. Tenor has like 19 also. Barry has like 10, or Barry has like 15 and bass has like 10. But anyways, it's really fun. And we were making our own. That's how I started working with Paduke. And I had known from growing up in Texas, just like, when I was in school, I wanted to practice instrument and stuff at home, like super helpful, you know, obviously, especially during the summer, we don't have access to instruments. So I was coming from that world. And I guess I got my shop space to start building the Zimbabwean instruments, but it was kind of a side thing to start building 5 octaves. And I was public school teaching at the time. So I didn't have like, you know, all the time in the world to focus on that. But yeah, I started building 5 octaves kind of like right when pandemic stuff hit. So I kind of quit all the other stuff I was doing and just focused on that for a while. So that summer I really refined it, and I just wanted to offer something that was like affordable. Actually, I have pulled up my old notes of what I wanted.
Okay.
Just for this.
The initial visionary notes.
Yeah. This is kind of what I was thinking, like my goals. I think I was talking to someone in December of 2019, and I wrote down my goals for like building a 5 octave, just to see if I could do it within these parameters. Because I felt like nobody else was building a practice 5 octave with these parameters. Mm-hmm. Like one, obviously it's like Paduke and not Rosewood, make sure it's height adjustable, making sure the bar sizes are the same and not like extra wide bars. I wanted it to be reductive and not additive in like, if you remember the end pieces, mm-hmm. They have like wood carved out of it instead of a rubber piece that's built into it, you know?
Right.
I just wanted to take wood and like reduce it rather than screwing stuff onto wood. And I wanted it to be shippable and without screwing with like a drill or a screwdriver. And I wanted it to be below $1,000 to make, which I definitely got now. It took me a while to get there, but I'm there now.
Well, what was costing you the most?
Yeah, it's like, I think what costs the most is convenience. Cause like at first I was buying pegs and rubber on Steve Weiss and like cord. I guess I still use the cord from Steve Weiss, but like just buying stuff that I already knew existed rather than going to a company and saying, can you laser cut like 1,000 pieces of this? Right. Now that I'm like scaling up, the cost goes down a little bit or a lot. So it's good. Yeah. At first it was probably, I guess it's never been 1,000 to make, but it just always felt like a lot because I didn't know what I was doing, I guess.
A lot of trial, that initial trial and error.
Yeah.
Seems to be the common story when it comes to like building businesses, especially when in the musical industry, because there's just so many ways you can go about doing it. And like, I'm sure most of the cost come from the actual wood itself?
No, actually the way I do it right now is the frame, all that metal. Oh. I think metal is more expensive than wood. Yeah, at least in the amount that I'm using. The Paduke is like, that's what got me into it. I was so surprised that I could build like a keyboard. The keyboard takes me like maybe 15 board feet of wood. And I think the Paduke right now is probably like $10 a board foot.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think right now it's the metal and like all the small things, the pegs and the rubber. But like I said, I'm just now scaling up really those. Yeah. So right now it's the metal, and metal I think is really volatile in price. I've just experienced like with all the COVID stuff. In fact, I ordered some today, and like, so I ordered some in November, and it was, say it was like $500, and I ordered the same thing today, and it was like $300. Yeah.
So that's quite the fluctuation, because that's, I know for us, my place of work was, we were ordering a 5-octave from Ron at Marimba One. And they were waiting on, like, they ordered it in May, and we just got it at the beginning of this month.
Yeah.
And you know, it's surprising. It's like, oh, we're waiting on a few small parts. It's like, how long could, you know, a few small parts? But, you know, with all the shipping stuff, and it's like, oh, I mean, these niche pieces of material that we need for these niche market instruments is... It's like, you know, taking way longer than it needs to, and it already takes long enough in a regular world. So
yeah, and I like what I'm doing, or I guess I was surprised at TMEA at how many manufacturers I talked to. I mean, I guess I should have known this, but like so much stuff they make in China, you know, they were telling
me. Of course, yeah.
And so I think that's a large part of it, is that the shipping got like super messed up overseas. But that's what I like what I'm doing, is like, I mean, all the stuff I get in Rochester, and it's like all here. So the most I ever wait is, I mean, the most I ever wait for something is 1 week, except for the guy I have I kind of outsourced like my drilling of the height adjustment holes of that like tube, the pipe, and the guy takes about 3 weeks for that. But yeah, all my stuff is quick turnaround. I wanted to say, kind of going back to building, or yeah, like things that you learn, you know, when you start a business or anything, you know, when you just try something new, is like what rumbled around in my mind after the first year is like, when you start something, obviously, like, you know, stuff that you know that you don't know things. You know, like I know that I have to get a shop, but I don't know like exactly the mechanics of like leasing a place or whatever. Like, how do I pack things? How do I tune? I know that I have to tackle those things, but the hardest thing is like, you don't know, like things that you don't know that you don't know. Like, for instance, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm starting woodworking. I don't know what tools I need for a specific task.
Oh my God, that is such a, like, I've considered like trying to refurb some drum sets in the past.
Yeah.
Or something. And like, you're like, what kind of freaking
saw
or whatever do I need? And it's either, oh, it's like you need a table saw or a router or something.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, bro, I'm just going to hire somebody to do this.
Yeah. Like, so you really got to learn the language, and like, I guess the language is not quite the right word, but of everything, like woodworking, you know, you got to learn the language. And then like, okay, now I want metal for my frame. Now I got to learn the language of metal, like the thicknesses, the hardness, the materials, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then like shipping, I got to like, am I going to do freight or ground, and just all this stuff. And like, how do I finish metal? Can I paint metal? I think I can paint wood like this. I don't know if that's the best, you know, like all that stuff. And I think, like I said, it's so hard to know when you go into something, what you don't know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, well, how difficult was that transition, or that decision to make the transition into doing the business full time?
I think, because
you said you were teaching full time. And everything.
Yeah, I was public school teaching. I just thought my quality of life wasn't good when I was public school teaching. And I'm definitely fortunate to be able to get out of that and try something new. I thought if I could, I just wanted to see if I could. And I thought like COVID was a good time to do this. I feel like there were like three or four other people that started because of the pandemic, just like making five octaves, which is cool. I didn't really start because of that pandemic. And actually I think the pandemic gave me time to just try, you know?
Right.
So I forgot what the original question was, but
what made you to decide to make that transition? Because
for
someone who honestly aspires to do the same one day, I'm just curious because, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening who are curious as well.
You know what? I also didn't go all in that I do a bunch of other stuff on the side too. Like I'm still doing lessons. I play piano, organ at a church. I still do my Zimbabwean stuff, which I get paid for. And there's something else that I'm forgetting. So that was a large part of it too, is I tried to diversify like my incomes during that summer, even though everything was shut down. But I actually got, quitting all the public school stuff freed me up to, I don't know, do all that. So I
How long did you teach?
Not that long, actually, from like beginning of 2018 to the beginning of 2020.
Okay.
Two school years. But once I made the first one, I was like, this is definitely possible, you know, to do this, make like maybe three or four a month, which is still kind of like, that's like my goal that I kind of set every month, which sometimes I meet, sometimes I don't, but that's okay. So it was honestly once I made the first one or the second one where it was like, I was surprised that I did it, I guess, like, because you go through school and it's these huge instruments and everyone, there's such a myth around like marimbas, I feel like, or many myths about tuning. And not that I have all the answers, I definitely don't, but like,
it's more achievable than you originally.
Yeah, you know, and when I was in school, people dumped on Paduke a lot, and downtalk.
For what reason, I wonder, because it's gonna have to be an option, right?
Yeah.
Considering the status of Rosewood. So
I don't know. And so once I tackled all the problems, like kind of identified them, knew how to work through it. Yeah, it was really just after the first or second one, which took me definitely two or three long months to figure out. Long months, I just like woke up at 6 a.m. I was in my shop, like figuring out let's start with, how do I like route out the little slots for the end pieces, right? And then like, I don't know what a router does and all that stuff. And then it's just like every day it's like that. So like I said, it was really after the first or second one, but I'm super happy with where it's at. Talking about Paduke in the sound, I went on this deep dive. I think this was after the summer of 2020, or sorry, the summer of 2021. So a year after I had started it, and like, this is kind of a myth of marimbas, I guess, is what makes Rosewood sound good? And like, why isn't Paduke as good, right? And so like, what would you say is the common answer that's given for that?
I mean, mainly there's not enough of it to reference. I don't know.
I'm saying in sound quality, you know?
Oh,
what's the big thing?
It's not as warm. It's not as full. Is that what it is?
But those are tonal characteristics. But like, what is a characteristic of wood that in Rosewood that makes it sound better at Paduke? You know?
Density,
density, right?
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, when you logic that out, like density, right? Here's the thing. Density, yeah, rosewood is so dense. And so like, that's why it sounds good.
Huh.
And I did this like huge deep dive and stuff into like material science and like all this stuff. And I was like collecting quotes from manufacturers and percussionists and stuff, like old people, percussionists and, yeah, but like, if you logic it out, I'll read some of them. I got them in front of me, but like, so is it that density, if the more dense it is, the more it's going to ring, then like there's woods that are denser than rosewood, like ebony is a big one. Ebony is pretty well in stock. It's not like super rare. And it's like 130%, or not 130%, probably like 30% more dense than rosewood.
Mm-hmm.
And we've used ebony in our Zimbabwean stuff. And it sounds like okay, but it sounds a little dead. And like maybe it's too dense, I guess. But then people say like, you know, obviously humidity affects the weight of wood, you know, like if there's more water in your wood if it's more humid.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's like more water, it's more dense. And like, does that make it sound better? I don't know. I just feel like density by itself is not the real answer. And like, in my mind, again, I'm not a material scientist, but I feel like I went pretty deep, and like it was talking about how like tightly packed the cells are and how organized they are is kind of what like allows vibrations to travel through faster and less impeded in a way. You know what yeah. I mean? So like it's possible for a wood species to be as dense as rosewood, but like just for whatever reason, the cells aren't aligned in the same way. And like, that's why you don't, and then again, these words like warm, you know, and resonance and stuff are hard to measure, right?
Yeah, of course. You know yeah, it's mean? Like, so, like the ear test and
yeah so if they aren't like as densely packed, I think what we're hearing is like overtones, you're not getting as much of the overtones, I would say.
Okay.
But anyways, I feel like there's a lot more to that as percussionists I feel like percussionists and companies like throw out terms stuff and density. Mm-hmm. But it's not right. It's not exactly right. But again, do I expect a company to be talking about the inner workings of cells in like wood species? Like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't on my website. I don't know. It's like
maybe rosewood.com does. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's
one thing. I have two quotes from, and not to down talk these companies, I love both of them very much. This is from 6 years ago. Well, I guess this is still on Lone Star Percussion's website.
Mm-hmm.
I just looked it up. Talking about Paduk, it says, think of Paduk as diet rosewood. Has a similar quality of sound, but not as rich, deep, or resonant. Not as rich, deep, or resonant. It's widely available in Africa, blah, blah, blah. Sounds nice enough for music, for the music room in your house. I wouldn't bring a Paduk marimba to a professional gig, but learning the music, it does the job perfectly well. Okay, here's the other thing. Paduk has a few other issues. It's less dense and will dent if you play with hard mallets, and it's susceptible to the elements, which yeah, like everything is. Keep the bars dry and don't play with rocks. It's like, I don't know, I've had my instrument in my house for like a year. I guess I'm also safe with it, but like, yeah, I don't think you're gonna dent it.
I was about to ask, is that true?
No, I mean, I haven't. Theoretically, I could see it, but the difference in density between Paduk and rosewood is not that much that that would happen.
I wouldn't think like,
and
the hardest mount you're going to play with is a rubber mallet, right? On a Marimba.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And you're going to, and the bars are covered with protective material.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah. And then Yamaha has a quote that says, "Padauk itself is soft, producing a softer timbre than rosewood." And it's like a softer timbre. Like, I was just going through my mind. Yeah, I don't know. Using those words is just, I don't know. It's interesting. I would not say that.
Softer timbre.
Yeah.
So yeah. if I played with the softest Mark Ford mallet from Innovative on a Padauk key, and then I played it in the exact same rosewood key, I would get a softer like, I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah, I don't
understand.
And like, I've made poplar keys, I made Padauk keys, I made ebony keys. Poplar is still a hardwood, as opposed to a softwood. So like,
make a lot of drum sets out of it, right? Or like vintage.
Yeah, like it sounds so similar. Like, it's just wood. I don't know.
Right.
And, and it's the way you tune it. If you tune it so that everything is reinforcing like its own resonance, its own resonant overtones and stuff, like, it's gonna sound good. It's gonna sound like a marimba key. So yeah, it's just funny, like, having the experience of tuning. I probably tuned like 50 sets of keys or something, and like looking at big companies and just seeing what they say about timbre and all these like unmeasurable terms.
Yeah, I don't know if I fully trust, if it seems like to me I trust specialists more so, because like when I was at UNLV, we got a brand new marimba from a very, very big name.
Yeah.
And keys were horrifically out of tune.
That's surprising. I've never had that. A lot of people say that to me.
And we can talk, I can tell you what it was off air, but
yeah, yeah.
We had to get them set to tomorrow to tune. And dude, we got them back and they were shaved, dude. I mean, like, yeah, yeah. There was a lot of, wasn't much left on the popsicle sticks, if you know what I mean. And that's how bad they were. And like, of course, immediately we get them back, they feel better, and they immediately opened up. Yeah. And it was like, and then, you know, and I got these new 5 octaves at my job from Marimba One. They're great.
Yeah.
They sound so good. Mm-hmm. And I was just so surprised from this other company that happened. And I was like, how, this isn't like, it takes long enough to build this instrument. It's already niche. It's already a special, there's only a select percentage of the population that owns one of these or plays on them or knows how to play them. Like, how do you not have the specialists like take the time to make sure that doesn't happen, right? I mean, like, if a program takes 20 grand out of their budget to buy one of these, like, I feel like you should probably triple check that. That's just my opinion. Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, honestly, it's probably a combination of things that like tuners are, the job of tuning is hard to find somebody to do.
Yeah.
You know, they probably are just in there tuning the whole set in a day. And like, by the time they get to whatever, A2, it's like they're super tired and unfocused and stuff. And then also, yeah, like the tuning probably isn't even at all the biggest cost of the instrument, you know, to like the manufacturer.
Right.
So they probably, I don't know, aren't the most invested.
Yeah.
They probably don't pay like the tuner, I would bet. That's what I would say.
I mean, it showed, like, let's be real here. And yeah, I'll tell you who it is off air, but
yeah,
it's mind-boggling. And to me, Because what I was learning in grad school about this whole rosewood deposit, like, you know, where it's going to run out, like, rosewood's already endangered, like, Paduke, unless there's somebody else making something, a full resonant five octave with another type of wood besides Paduke or rosewood, Paduke is the next up, right? I mean, like, we got to make it happen with that, unless we are just going to try to salvage rosewood for the rest of humanity. I don't know.
Yeah. But like, how crazy it is it that like we kind of started playing on rosewood marimbas? I think, I mean, I guess I don't know the super history. I feel like percussion and mallet instruments blew up late 1970s or whatever, early mid 1970s. Right. It's like all these people are building rosewood instruments, and just in like 40 or 50 years it's like gone, you know.
Yeah. And
I guess, but like other instruments are using them too, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Keiko shows up in the 80s with that five octave and everybody's like, oh my god.
Yeah,
you know. And you know, credit to us for, I think people forget how young this is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like we're still adding to the rep, like we're still establishing standard rep.
Yeah,
what is standard rep is not going to be standard. Like it's going to be obsolete at some point. Like, yeah. No, you know, there's only going to be improvement from here, one could hope, but like also there's, you know, people forget how young drum set is. People forget, yeah, like the art of cymbal making is centuries old, but the art of combining them with in a modern fashion is, yeah, extremely young. So it's, I think I tend to forget that. And I tend to forget the whole, like, people wonder why it doesn't like draw a ton of attention outside of our community. It's like, well, you know, we're still figuring it out. Like, yeah. I think electronic percussion is going to draw more people in than anything that don't do this. I mean, I'm sure you would agree, but it's just one of those things where like it's a perspective thing. And if these discussions are important, because like we're still all just trying to figure it out, and like this is an era in which we're gonna look back on of like that was a huge developmental era, especially with companies like yourself spurring out of and not saying yours wasn't even a product of the pandemic, it was started before.
Yeah,
so I think we're gonna look back on this era like that. I could be wrong, but
yeah, something's been shaking around in my head. That's like, I feel like everything, unless there's an advance in technology, it's like everything has been thought of that you could possibly like make or do or whatever, but it's like not everything has been done, you know?
Right.
You gotta actually go do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like you gotta take the leap and do it. Like it's super easy to think about stuff, and even in percussion, just like, what if, you know, like I feel like in school and composers and whatever, it's always just like, what if we like prepared the marimba like this, you know, like what if we taped yardsticks to it or like whatever, you know? But it's like, until you actually do it, it doesn't exist, obviously, right. But you actually got to do it. Yeah, I was also going to say, yeah, I think the scene is young, but like, man, it is. Okay, here's one thing too. It is, I feel like the range of, this was my example, is Dances of Earth, Wind, and Fire, the piece by, but I played it. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll have my producer look that up, which is me. So, Dancing to Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Or no, Dances of Earth and Fire.
It was a
Peter Klatzow. Peter Klatzow.
Yeah. And he passed away recently too. Yeah, RIP.
Love his stuff. I played that. Before I played that, and I heard it sometimes. I had heard it before. And like, I didn't follow it at all, right? And then to someone that like isn't in percussion but is in music, it would be even harder to follow, I feel like. Someone that Joe Schmo off the street, like, they're gonna be like, what the hell is this? But then after I played it and like dug deep into it, it meant so much to me, like hearing another performance, how they did it. And like, I really got stuff emotionally out of other performances. I feel like that range is so big with percussion stuff and mouth stuff in general, like between when you play it and understand stuff and then like the average person, they get like nothing out of it, I feel like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Except for that it's looking, you know, it's cool that someone's holding four mallets as opposed to like flute, you know, like I don't know too much about flute, but I could like hear a flute piece and I would like it. If that makes sense.
Yeah. The ear, I mean, think about like people like Caribbean music, but they don't understand anything about it except for it wants to make them dance. To the average listener, Caribbean music's like the best thing ever. Like they hear a steel band or they hear like pop music these days has like soca and every calypso all up in it. And we are still trying to figure out how to, there's a reason why these YouTube guys are making, are getting million views, or like Gene Kaczynski and Tim, they just as reached a million views on As One. That's huge. There's not a million. I don't think the percussion community can accumulate a million views. It might be able to, but like there's outside eyes and ears looking at and listening to that.
No, that is true. And I was, the other thing I was going to say is that I think the scene is just beautiful. Like there's so much entrepreneurial spirit and stuff. And it's so unique. Yeah. And the high school kids, like going back to Texas, and been there or hadn't like seen high school Texas players in person, but man, they just kill it. It's crazy the level there. And it's really awesome to
see Burrett, man. I mean, they kept up with, that piece is not easy. And
I mean, they're playing Fandango 13, which is like, that was cool. And it's cool to see that, like, obviously, I don't know, it's just like, I'm sure those kids have the same passion that I did when I was in high school. And it's so addicting. Playing and just being in the scene. And I think it's thriving, especially with like an entrepreneurial spirit.
I like how I like how you describe that. That I've never heard it described that way, but it makes sense. There's like somebody like always trying to do something.
Media companies. It's like percussion kids, right? And it's like, who's, I don't know, that's the only example I can think of. But like who, I don't know, percussionists just like make their own companies repairing stuff and blah, 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 and all that stuff. I feel like they're the most apt people to that. And composers, like, I feel like percussion has the most performer composers.
Oh my God.
Of like any discipline in a music school, which is such an old school thing, like a Baroque idea of like the performer composer relationship and just, that identity as a performer composer was such a big thing in like Baroque era. And now it's more of a performer audience composer triangle that are all different people, you know? So it's really awesome to see that when you're like in high school and you get to interact with people that you look up to as like composers and stuff like that. It's definitely really meaningful.
I mean, the stuff that Casey does, like, Casey just dropped this new piece today. It's 27 minutes long.
I haven't followed it. I saw that.
It's 27 minutes long. And it's a drum set solo piece that is to a track with that has like the Dr. Beat voice or something.
That's funny.
It's crazy. And he's got some tracks towards the end that like some jazzy stuff and like a little bit of alternative. Like it's cool. And it's him playing it in the video. So it's not like like, you know, like, it's not like the like a random composer just like, I want to write for exactly. bass, clarinet, and marimba.
Yeah.
Like, they have nothing to do with the actual performance of it, like you're saying. But stuff like that, we're very lucky. I mean, we're that contributes to that entrepreneurial spirit. I really like how you said that because it makes a ton of sense. And people are making, they're making a side hustle out of themselves.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, like Caleb just got this gig at Northwest Missouri State, or I think that's who it is. Sorry, Caleb. But he's also writing incredible compositions still. And like, there's just so many of those guys that are, they're Brian Nosny, good friend of the show, who's at McNeese State University and my alma mater now. And, we did a couple projects for him, or we are doing a couple projects for him, and like, just the same thing. And like, talking to these guys, it's like, dude, you guys are machines. I never got into the composition thing. I have ideas. I've never like actually done it.
That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. Like everybody else is doing it.
You can think of it. Yeah. Yeah.
And part of what Caleb talked about on actually the podcast that we him and I did on here, he was just like, you know, a lot of people are like, so how do you do this? Like, how do you do all this? How do you do that? How do you make your own tracks for your compositions? How do you, when he's like, dude, and it's exactly what you were saying. It's like, exactly. You just got to explore and you got to figure it out.
Yep.
And in order to do something in this and make a name for yourself, you kind of just got to find and have that idea slap you in the face and you just got to do it.
Yeah.
And so stories like yourself, like I imagine, I think you going to Team EA was a big deal because
yeah, it was
Team EA, and I'm sure it was financially, you know, an obligation, or maybe it wasn't, I don't know, but I think it was worth it in your end because that's a huge, that's the biggest music convention out there music education convention out there. Yeah. So bigger than Midwest. I mean, you know, so it's one of those things where, it's exciting. It's inspiring nonetheless. So,
yeah, I was really happy to meet. I didn't realize how many new people I would meet. And it was awesome. Like the way they do it being, if you have an instrument company, you're like with all the instrument companies, right?
Yeah, of course.
So like you really get to rub shoulders with those people. And it was cool getting their feedback and just meeting people. Yeah, it really helped. My thought was, if I sell one instrument there, I will have made money on it. Okay. So going to TMEA, which I did. So it all worked out. It was good.
Did you drive from New York?
No, I have family in Austin. Okay. And so I was in Austin for like a week and a half, and then we drove down there.
Okay, cool. Yeah, oh, that's right. You grew up in the Austin area, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I know Texas stuff for sure.
There you go. Texas boy. Yeah. And you know this because I went to school out of state as well for both degrees. And you know, it's just like a euphoric situation.
Going back? There. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, like in our programs.
Yeah.
Because I'm talking to Kyle Peters, who I'm sure you know.
Yep. Hey, that's a guy, entrepreneur. Like, he writes his own stuff too, and it's great.
Yeah, he sent me his book, Concert Etudes for Marimba. It's good stuff.
Anyways,
no, I'm just saying, like, there's like the way they do, like, the process of like New York does things for their public school. You know, Nevada, how they do things, it's like, what?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's not necessarily good or bad. And that's part of the reason why I stayed here, honestly, is I was so fascinated because like they do pull out lessons, fourth and fifth grade every week. So if you're a kid, I'm playing flute. I get pulled out of math class for a 30-minute lesson every week, which is super cool. And it's like 3-on-1 with a teacher, you know? Yeah. So like the elementary schools and kind of middle schools are like way... better, I guess. I think they're like better. because that's their system they got, than Texas. And I was very interested in that. And I thought it was cool. But yeah, their high schools are so, like, you know, non-existent. You know, partly because weather. It's like they don't have marching band because of weather, because it's always cold and the sun sets early. And then, like, obviously they don't have football so much. So, like, there's not football money to go to band. Right. Blah, blah, blah. You know, there's just a bunch of that. A bunch of that stuff. But yeah.
So, how did you, just curiosity, how'd you wind up out there? Because I'm sure you had options in Texas for school.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a huge Mallet kid, through high school, and I was in the Austin area. So I was like a big Tom Barrett kid, and, did stuff with him. Awesome guy. And my teacher, David Sad, at Westlake in Austin, went to Northwestern in whatever year it was. But the first 2 years he was there, Michael Burrett was like the teacher. And then he went to Eastman halfway through David's time there. And then Shi Wu came in. But anyway, so he knew Burrett for like 2 years. And yeah, he just encouraged me to audition. Like my senior year, I, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to go into music. And then he was like, yeah, you should do, you know, UT, Baylor, something else. And you should like just audition to Eastman just to like meet Burrett and have the experience. I was like, okay, cool. And yeah. And then Burrett really liked me and like, I got in and I decided to go and it was a great experience. Yeah. Very, very glad I went.
Yeah. It seems like
I came up here and I actually, and yeah. And then I added music ed like my sophomore year. Yeah. I was very like against the music ed stuff. And then I took a class. I thought it was really cool. They're like super into improvising, and like using your ear and stuff, which as a Texas kid, I never, you know, did.
Yep.
So, and yeah, and like that's another thing in fourth and fifth grade they do is just like they start year based for 3 months. It's like you're not seeing sheet music yet. It's just that type of stuff is really cool. So I added music ed and then I did student teaching and I just like got a job here. So that's why I kind of stayed up here. And I felt like Austin was getting too big for me and like I didn't really like going back home anymore. And Rochester was like a nice size. There's like a lot to do if you go look for it. And yeah, all that stuff.
Austin's completely changed, man.
Yeah, every like 2 years.
It's a tech capital now.
Dude, South Congress, I don't know if you go to Austin much, but yeah. South Congress looks like California now. It's like so much. It's crazy.
Dude, South Congress looks like I'm walking. Mm. It was like that time I was walking down Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles. Like it.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And it's expensive now.
Dude, and that's why I don't know if I was talking to you or someone, but like, I guess it was my friend Kevin, like, definitely like TMEA would be really cool in Austin. I feel
Yeah.
You know,
it would, they've had PASICs there before.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that. Yeah.
But I don't know. My brother lives in Austin. He lives in the northern side. He lives by Cedar Park, and nice area, dude. But I mean, I was like, holy crap! How do you afford this? Because
yeah,
it's becoming like a bunch of celebrities have moved there. You know, tech people, and it's like, is it gonna turn into not a artsy place anymore, or do you think it'll always hold that value?
No, I think once the city limits get to a certain point, you can't have like starving artists or even just like regular artist people. Yeah, it's just commercialized like LA, I guess. But yeah. Hey, anyways, I am looking at my other slides that I have here. I this is from like summer of 2021 about all the Paduke and like Rosewood Myth. I forgot to say something. And I was listening to an At Percussion podcast, which is the only percussion podcast I had known of until, Well, I guess I knew none of others, but obviously, like, those guys were one of the first.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and when Lee Stevens was on there, I don't have a timestamp for it, but obviously he is like, this was when he was trying to promote like the M-Tech stuff that they were coming out with Padauk. And he says, if tuned well, Padauk sounds better than Rosewood.
Whoa.
And that's a direct quote from Lee Stevens.
I gotta listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to find it. I wish I put the timestamp on it.
Would you know the episode number?
No, I mean, you can just search like Lee Stevens.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But again, it's like, if you're a company, you're going to, I mean, no diss on Lee Stevens, because I literally do the same thing. I'm like, I want everyone to go watch Adam Tan's video about, like, you know, Padauk and Rosewood. Yeah, can you tell the difference and stuff? You know, like, it's a great video because, like, you can't and blah, blah, blah. But like, if you're a company, obviously you're going to like use whatever science is out there, or like tweak the science to like fit whatever narrative you're trying to sell, you know?
Right.
Which is like exactly what those, I don't know if that's what those quotes from Lone Star Percussion and like Yamaha are trying to do, but even subconsciously, I feel like companies do that a lot. And again, it's like, what's the answer? It's like, should we hire a material scientist to like do studies on Rosewood and Padauk? Like, probably not. I don't know.
Yeah. And then get like a random third party wood that nobody would expect, and be like, actually, this one's the right one or whatever.
Yeah. But once I started working with Padauk and just wood and tuning in general, it makes you think a lot different about everything you hear about Rosewood, and it makes you hear the instrument differently, honestly, which is like a really cool thing. I remember my teacher, David Sad, in high school, he like dampened a note and then played like the node of it to try to get the second overtone out.
Oh.
So it was like, whatever, if you're hitting a G2, you're going to be wanting to hear like a B5 or a B4. And like, I couldn't hear it. I was like, what the hell is he talking about? But now today, like, I could, if you just hit it without dampening anything, I could totally hear that overtone pop out. And I can definitely hear like tunings and the differences in from marimba to marimba a lot more. Yeah. I mean, I think that's just a regular thing. Like when you get experience doing something, you notice the flaws in something else, or, you know, you notice the flaws in your own work so much more.
I'm experiencing that with, I'm trying to get better at timpani tuning.
Yeah.
And, like I've gotten okay at it, and like trying to make sure, I just hadn't had a ton of experience. Like when in grad school, I would do it, but it would be a rush job, and then like somebody else would clean it up or whatever. And it's like, I'm like realizing, I'm like, wow, some drums are, like modern drums are, I don't know how they do it, but they're so much easier to tune than like these old like 1980s Ludwigs at the school. We have a brand new set of Adams, and then we have a really old set of Ludwigs. I'm like, oh my god, these Adams took me like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And these Ludwigs are taking me 15 minutes per drum.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I'm trying to, but those,
talking about clearing the head and stuff, and then like,
yeah, yeah,
you're doing it, okay, yeah,
getting the drum dial out, and you know, trying to see, and you know, refining tension, and like you start to realize, and I was realizing this in that Facebook group, Orchestral Percussion Talk, there is such a, I think there's a deeper timpani community than I thought.
Like, yeah,
there's people who are legitimately like, that's the only thing
they
do.
Oh yeah.
I had no idea. I never realized that.
Especially with, I mean, I guess it's obvious, but like if you think of teachers that are the timpanists of whatever orchestra, their students are always just like, there's always one or two or three that are like super hardcore timpani.
That's crazy.
Like, I can think of Matt Strauss. I mean,
yeah,
amazing player, awesome guy. And like every 4 years he has a few kids that like are just complete timpani guys. Matt Strauss and then probably Tim Janis, I would bet, and you know, stuff like that.
I went to Rice's marimba recital.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2 weeks ago, maybe, and three weeks ago.
Well, can you explain that more? Rice's marimba recital.
Rice University.
Yeah, but like, yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's where Strauss is
mm-hmm.
Teaching.
Yeah.
And they are monsters.
Yeah.
Like,
dude. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody there, like this girl Dana Dominguez.
Yes, you know? I was about to say that. She posted her thing on Instagram. Dude. I was like, oh my God. I did not know she had those, like,
dude. She played Cangelosi's,
yeah,
A to an E minor.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, she filled up that entire hall, yeah, bro. Like, she, her, yeah, sound quality. I was like, she was first one too. I was like, how are you guys going to top this?
Yeah.
And like, I was just like, mouth agape. I was like,
yeah,
damn.
That is so awesome, man. Cause like,
your she's a tiny little thing too. She's a,
yeah,
tiny,
yeah, thing. I think it's so easy if you're a really orchestral focused person to, I don't know. I feel like those people I've known really shy away from marimba and like downplay it. And because it's so easy if you're an orchestral person to just be like, well, I'm going to get an orchestral job. You know, like you can't, yeah, have a marimba job. You know, like how many times have I heard that? A lot. And it's true, I guess. It is true. But it's so easy, I think, if you're in there, that orchestral mindset, to shy away from that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was awesome to see. I saw that too.
She, yeah, I was in the crowd and I was like, first of all, everybody did so well. Like everybody played,
yeah,
incredible. And like, that was the kind of thing where I had never been able to see any of Strauss's students because I've always, mm-hmm, been out of town, or I've been a student myself, or I haven't, mm-hmm, lived in Houston full time in a while. And now that I'm here, I'm like, okay, well, let's check this out. And now that they're allowing audiences and stuff like that. And I was like,
yeah,
I forgot. You tend to forget the reason why you love this stuff so much.
Yeah.
Like the reason why we put ourselves through hell and like to get better at this is like, mm-hmm, watching inspiring performances like that. You're like, yeah, all right, that's, I remember now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, and you chase that feeling as a performer and like as a listener.
Oh, know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just as much of an adrenaline rush as a listener as it is. And that's the kind of thing you want to convey as a performer. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, I respect Cameron Leach so much because he does the solo thing so often, and it's like,
mm-hmm, yeah.
And it's like, dude, there's, like, I get it. Like, I've always gotten it, but the pandemic made us forget a little bit, or made me forget, mm-hmm, especially. And I'm like, yeah, I was like, man, that was just what I needed. It was like a shot in the arm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was like a little adrenaline boost. It was good.
Yeah. But
I'm sure you saw a lot of that, Eastman. And like, I saw some incredible performances in my time at clinics and at the schools that I went to. But, yeah, every once in a while, you just need kind of a wake up call. As much as we have put a time we have put into all this and like how we get into the grind of whatever we're doing, it's hard to remember the reason why we got into it in the first place.
Yeah, that's true. And but you kind of get into it not knowing why, I feel like, or like,
oh,
what,
true,
the end goal is. You know what I mean? Which is the fun of it.
Exactly. Like.
Yeah.
Well, do you wanna plug some socials, the website, anything for the company?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the website is Sonaris Percussion, sonaris.com, and Instagram and Facebook is the same thing, at Sonaris Percussion. Yeah, hopefully also TMEA. I know we're wrapping up. TMEA, I met a lot of people that encouraged me and people had encouraged me before it to like get into the whole tuning bars, you know, repairing bars and like repairing percussion, repairing instruments. So I'm trying to expand into that. There's a guy here in Rochester that does that too, and like so I'm trying to expand into that more, hopefully at some point. But you know, I just kind of like crack my own bars, try to repair them. That's where I should start. It's just one of those things I gotta do. I gotta start doing. I can think about it as much as I want, but it's like I gotta start doing it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's I'm letting you have that one, because there's you gotta have like a special kind of focus for that, and we need as many people like that as we can get, because there's there can't be a ton of people who do it in like the right way, or willing to have the passion and are willing to do it the right way. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, honestly, and like this is a whole nother discussion, I guess, but like tuning is like not that hard. It's really not that hard. Like with the, I think the tuning technology has gotten so free and so advanced. Like the free versions are so advanced, and you don't need a strobe tuner. Like if you have two tuners that are these certain ways and you just like are cross-referencing them all the time, you just like, you get a feel for it, and you just gotta do it. And once you get past the first 7 sets, you'll be a lot better. Anyways, I do want more people to be making marimbas regionally, and I want people to be repairing bars regionally and stuff. This is what I said with John, Third Floor Percussion, John Singer. He did a thing during PASIC that was like an alternative to PASIC or whatever. And I did a live stream, and he was talking about Marimba One just came out with their version of like, you know, the practice marimba thing. And it was like $3,000. And they're like, oh, are you scared? I'm like, no, I'm not scared at all. Like that's what I want. I want more companies to get into that market, and like, because that's what kids need. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't provide every practice marimba on demand.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
you can sell as many as you want, but like,
yes, I want there to be more of a competition and more choice of like reasonable, affordable, quality practice keyboards.
Yeah.
So I respect anyone that's doing that.
You know? And I think, and look, this is coming from me, personal experience of playing your practice keyboard a little bit at TMEA, it's exactly what you need. So if anybody out there is in the market for one, the price point is great, right, the quality is great, and you get to probably talk to Greg one-on-one personally about it. And like, you know, there's like, it's a good investment for yourself or for a student or whatever. And I would just encourage everybody to kind of turn your way and direct your interest towards Greg's practice keyboard, because it's exactly what you need, I promise.
Yeah, I have a few people who just got out of school and like use it to teach.
Yeah.
Just start a studio. And then once you have enough money, you can get whatever, that Malatech M-Tech that has resonators or whatever, you know, you can like upgrade, and you can sell mine, you know, you can, yeah, exactly.
Do you think you'll ever venture into making resonators? And
I think I would have to start working with someone else. Like I do everything by myself.
Yeah.
And I just don't have the energy to redesign my whole thing. And like I said at the beginning, there's so much stuff you don't know that you don't know about. Like for resonators, you know, now I got to know like how to ship them, or like how to whatever. I don't know, like how to bolt them to each other, or like whatever. It's just like a whole nother can of worms, you know. So
right,
people ask me all the time, and in my mind it's like, that's not the point of my thing I'm doing. I think people already do that really well, you know. Sure. I'm doing what I'm doing because I didn't think people did it the way I thought it could be done.
Okay.
So
yeah that's perfect answer, because
yeah,
I think sticking to your plan and I don't know if I fully agree with like the 5-year plan thing, but it definitely does help gauge what you need to. It just puts everything into that time frame where you're going to want to get somewhere, and you got to understand it takes time. And I think your brain just naturally is just like, okay, we got this amount of time, whatever. We can look a little bit into the future, but right now let's check these boxes. And like, starting a business, which I have an idea for of my own, is like, okay, checking the few small boxes, like, okay, I bought the LLC, you know, got the federal EIN, whatever. And it's like, okay, now here's the fun part.
Like, that's not really a business, even, you know, like that's, you know,
yeah.
You gotta, yeah. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would encourage anyone to even just take a piece of wood and try to tune it, and it'll change how you hear. Like if you put it to a belt sander, if you have access to some type of belt sander, just throw on a tuner, try to tune something, and you'll be surprised, no matter what type of wood it is. As long as it's not like plywood or softwood, any hardwood, and it'll change the way that you hear stuff for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, I appreciate you coming on, man. The it was a pleasure to meet you in person first, which is kind of rare for this podcast. So, yeah. Aaron, our previous guest, everybody, Aaron Stabell, he hooked it up, and we were chatting at TMEA, and had a great time. And but yeah, man, I appreciate you coming on. It's been fun.
Yeah, you're welcome. Aaron's another one who. Actually, first met him when he was composing stuff, and we played a piece of his. You know,
yeah.
So just always like that. You know,
always is. Great. And that's how this community is, and that's why I love it so much. So it's,
yeah,
it's well, yeah. You can go look at all this socials that Greg plugged for Sonaris, and you know, check out his practice marimba. It's like I said, it's exactly what you need. So you can follow. All those socials, you can check out the website, and you can check out all of our stuff at the Rhythminal Pod on Instagram. You can follow me at Heartwell Drums, all that good stuff. You can subscribe, rate, and review. I have to do it for the podcast. And also, if you're interested in donating or contributing in any kind of way to what we do here at the Rhythminal Pod, there's a link in the description below of each episode. So, with that being said, that's it for this one. We'll see you next time.